Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Red Men TV. My name is Ben Kelly. No final word this week, so we're bringing you something a little bit different, bit of an October/November review since the last international break. Joining me for this is Ross, Paul and Chris. We are back by The Athletic for this video, the home of some of the best football writing content in the world, from the likes of James Pearce and Simon Hughes from a Liverpool perspective. You can get a fresh special offer that we've got partnered with The Athletic right now. If you go to theathletic.co.uk/redmentv, you can get 30-day free trial and 50% off your annual subscription for no ads or pop-ups for a whole year. Sounds pretty good to me. But, gents, we've
nailed
got...
Nailed it.
Sat there quite nervous about that before going in, but there we go. We've got, obviously, I've put together a bit of an agenda. We've got a load of information in front of us. Ross, 12 Premier League games in, we're 8 points clear at the top, 11 wins, one draw. I got through The Athletic thing.
The stuff people are very apt to come for.
The football knowledge. They were unbeaten, and we're 9 points clear of, you know, probably who we'd all consider to be our, you know, toughest competitors, Man City. It's all going rather well, isn't it?
Splendid, so yeah. Almost like I didn't want the international break to come. You're in the rhythm.
You never do.
Well, no, but it's just, I think we got a lot better at it, but I think we, previous season, we got an international break and we come back, we lose that rhythm, we find it hard to get going again. Particularly, I don't think we've been playing particularly well either. City in parts, Spurs, as you mentioned before, I think we've been great, but we've kind of been grinding out results. We get to the part now where I think you need to kind of do that again. It was a heavy fixture list for Liverpool and every other team. I think now it's about using our squad a lot more than we have been doing. I think we're trying to bed in Chamberlain, Keita coming back. There's other players that haven't had as much game time as Shaqiri. I think the time is to go and use all those players that we've got.
It's really weird. I was thinking about some of the previous seasons when Liverpool have been at their best and what have you. It was inspired by a question I had about my favourite chocolate bar was, and I was reminded of the double-decker in 2013-14, and me and Chris's...
What a fucking chocolate bar.
Yeah,
but not just in 13-14, it's continued its strong heritage.
Yeah, but just not in my life. But the 13-14, we had a little routine, didn't we? And we had to go to the same shop, and we had to buy the same things from the same shop and do the same things on the way down to Anfield. And we did, we were building up towards the end of the season, and we were talking about how we were like, what are you doing at home? What are you doing that is the reason Liverpool are being good? Like, what is it you've changed about your routine this season? What is the thing that you're doing every single game? Is it your lucky socks, your lucky pants, your lucky chocolate bar, all this kind of stuff? And I'm sure we'll get to that. But at the moment, the only tangible, if at all, impact I'm having on Liverpool being dead good is that I shout quite noisily at the matches I go to and clap my hands and I sing a bit. I don't feel as though this is built on first time.
But for that, because of how the level that we're playing at, the players we've got, how good we are, you don't feel the need to have to draw those comparisons because in 13-14, it's like, well, you know, really, the squad, particularly at the back, we're not that good, so it must be something I'm doing. You begin to draw those conversations yourself. With this, it doesn't feel
It is? It's when you've got an absence of control in life, people look for higher powers and superstition and all that kind of stuff to try and plug the gaps between their understanding and what they're actually seeing around them. And I think that's the difference, is that I have complete faith, and I think most of us now do, in the owners and the manager and the players on the pitch, which is quite freeing in some ways. It's really boring in other ways, to be honest.
Jurgen Klopp is that superpower that you're looking for? Jurgen Klopp.
I don't know, I've got a big game t-shirt. It's 1-3... drawn one, but the draw was away at Old Trafford. So it's still an unbeaten chair. Yeah, we won a trophy. No, we won. they didn't win a trophy. We did. So
right.
When it's the big games, I'm still wheeling them out.
Yeah.
So I'm not past that stage quite yet, even though I know I should be by now with this Liverpool side. So, look, I just love watching this Liverpool side. And there is, look, we're not fucking superstitious anymore because we don't have to be. Because Jürgen, as Ross says, has got it.
Despite just admitting that you are still superstitious.
Absolutely. Can I bury that?
Eventually.
If we look back then, Chris, we'll look back at this sustained period. So since the last international break, we played 7 games in all competitions, drawing 1 and winning 6. So we played 4 in the Premier League, 1 in the Carabao Cup, and 2 in the Champions League, both against Genk. Ross has touched on there that obviously we're probably going to go into a period now where we are going to have to start rotating players, because what I've got down written down for you is the total number of minutes per player per competition in the game, and I've discounted some players here. So Joel Matip played 90 minutes, but he's not on my list. It's one between two, sorry.
Wanted to save paper. It was fantastic.
I know, well, you know. There's a lot of paper. So Joel Matip played 90 minutes. He's not on the list because he's had a sustained period out of injury. Uh-huh. But Virgil van Dijk and Alisson have both played 540 minutes each. They're the two. Obviously, discarding Alisson a little bit. And then you've got Sadio Mane, Fabinho and Trent Alexander-Arnold, who've all played 450 minutes or more, which is the equivalent of 5 full games or more. Uh-huh. So you can see that a lot of them are starting to play quite a lot of football. But as Ross said before, Chris, you've got some players now like Naby Keita, Oxlade-Chamberlain, Adam Lallana, you can see in the other competitions, not necessarily in the Premier League, are starting to get some minutes because obviously in this next period now of 14 games in 42 days, which again we'll come on to later, we're going to have to rely on them getting Premier League minutes somewhere. And, Oxlade-Chamberlain in particular hasn't started a league game since Newcastle. You would expect to see him start some over the next 14 games, absolutely.
Oh, he absolutely has to. I keep thinking about how we've discussed this over the last few months and stuff, is that Liverpool are just collecting points now and banking those points, and then at some point you can almost take your foot off the gas. And I'm expanding that point now. And for me, what you do by Liverpool playing essentially the same team every week and winning games every week is you're actually forcing the hand of every other team. So is Guardiola able to put a rotated side out, being 9 points behind Liverpool at any point? Is he now thinking, I have to get every one of my good players in every week just in case? So it's not just what Klopp's doing to these Liverpool players and stuff, and he will have to get players in, but what is he doing to the other teams? They're not going to be in a position where they're going to be able to rotate anymore, and he's going to kill their teams by just them going, well, I'm playing mine every week, and we're going to win games every week, and they're going, I really can't afford to fucking rotate any players here, boys. These guys are just going to win again.
He's, and I largely agree. I think when you get to December, we talk about this all the time, everybody has too many fixtures in December.
Yeah.
So if you can just get yourself to a position, it's a stretch for the old analogy I've used this on other shows. When it was first advice I was ever given about getting drunk was off me mate's dad at New Year's when I was too young to be drunk, and he said basically wait till someone else first shows a sign that they're pissed, and then you're fine. And that's the thing with Liverpool, is that they're not rotating. They're going to reach a point where everyone has to rotate, and you'll find Liverpool rotate because you won't be a significant drop off. Because if everyone's struggling, then Liverpool will be able to cope with it a bit better than the teams around. I feel, and I think we're starting to see that in the trends set in this last period, because everyone's saying, where's Robertson getting his break? Where's Trent getting his break? And okay, Trent's not had a particularly, particularly great break in there. I think he's only missed one game of footy, and that was a Champions League game. Robbo's played slightly less minutes. They're not playing the Carabao Cup games. Yeah. I think you're going to start to see that creep in a little bit more, because with Milner, for example, Milner's got all his minutes in the Champions League in this spell. Mm-hmm. You'll play more games with fullback because we've only got 2 Champions League games left to play.
Yeah.
And once they're out the way, he'll need to play those games.
Particularly if you beat Napoli. So the plan will obviously be, well, you beat Napoli at home, you then not necessarily play the kids, but you've got so much room to play about a bit more away at Salzburg. You can play that's where there'll be a key game of rest. Even the Napoli game itself, at this point you'd fancy us to go through. So, you can drop in a couple. I'd fancy us to beat Napoli at home, largely with, as long as you don't rotate too heavily, you could probably get away with maybe playing James Milner in that game. You know, I don't think I necessarily have a problem with that. And then obviously nobody's going to play at Villa, which, you know, that's the Carabao Cup game, you know, on the way. All the kids are going to play there, and then you've got the World Club Cup as well. But Ross, if we just go back a little bit to some of the games, let's talk through some of the performances and stuff from the previous spell, because obviously it started away at Man United where we were quite poor, but it felt like, you know, we talked quite a lot this season about this Liverpool side finding different ways to particularly win games, but to get a result there, having played so poor, historically isn't something that we do at Old Trafford. And that, for me, was a real big, having beaten Leicester just before the international break with a last-minute penalty, that, for me, was another showing of the mentality this side has to go away at Man United, go a goal down, which we always do, not play very well. And in the end, actually, you know, we come away with a draw, which is a good result. We could have even won it.
Yeah, it's just frustrating the fact that we didn't perform that day. And again, it comes back to having an international break and coming back and not being in full flow. Mm. I think he rotated because I think Lallana ended up playing that game coming on. And it was those substitutions that made the difference. I think we saw he went with his traditional front three that he does in big games, when I think people have been crying out for. I think it was him, Chamberlain and...
Well, Chamberlain and Caton came on.
But that's when we started to kind of force it and we got the goal. But I think you have to be careful who you choose. I think it was a good time to play Man United because they weren't very good. But also they wheeled in Sir Alex Ferguson to give them a motivational team talk, and he went down to trade and stuff like that. He's always going to do it, but it seems like a mental block at Old Trafford where we just haven't been able to do it. I don't think Klopp's won there in his time at Liverpool. But to get a point and not lose, I think, was massive. And then to go forward from that, that was the first point we dropped this season, for them to just go and carry on. But it's not just that game that they show they don't give up, they do it every week.
Yeah. Well, we got the psychological boost from that, because we finished that game. If that goes the other way around, if we lose a 1-0 lead, it has a complete opposite effect. Whereas it actually, I think it informs the games that follow. It definitely informs the Aston Villa performance, and how we responded to that. I think you're right. I think we've had this, and we talked about this a lot, because we just shit the bed at Old Trafford. And I think, until we win there, we're not going to see that we've broken that in any way, shape or form. But the fact that we went, oh, let's just go for it and see what happens. We went for it. And obviously Lallana gets the equaliser. So we got the real spirit of positivity coming out of that game, which is mad, because we probably shouldn't have it. It felt a bit like a wasted opportunity at the time, because we had all our six balloons ready and all that, because we were ready for a massive party, which it wasn't. But psychologically, the squad got to take something massive out of that. And, you know, I've heard it referenced in other places, we learned a lesson there that don't stop to celebrate. Draws aren't good enough. Mm. You know, the Aston Villa then went subsequently showed us, actually, as long as there's a kick left in the game, there's a chance that you can score a goal. So as much as it was the disappointing result in the league, there's probably real benefits that we've gained.
Yeah. And the importance of a squad as well, because I think when Lallana came on, if I remember people kicking off going, oh, Lallana's coming on, 1-0 down at Old Trafford, and Lallana's coming on, and then he scores a goal and then goes, he can do a job.
Obviously, Keita as well, you know, Keita's, for me, still a little bit on the fringes. That you get subbed off at home to Arsenal in the Cup, he gets subbed off at home to Genk, you know, they're games for me that he should be having more of an influence on, but, you know, you could certainly see, you're still continuing to see flashes from the likes of him, and I think, obviously, that's where it all starts for Chamberlain as well, where he comes on. Most of his contributions, Chris, have been in the Champions League, you know, in the two Genk games, which in general were a bit of a non-event, the pair of them, you know, in terms of the context of this show. His performances there were probably the most notable thing about them, but also, between the Man United and the Villa game, you had Tottenham as well, which I think is really, I think that's one worth talking about, because we go behind so early and we still show the character to come around. But actually, when I look back at all of our performances this season, particularly how good we were in the first half, for me, that was possibly our best performance of the season so far, and we certainly deserved to win that game.
Up until that point, it definitely was the best first half performance, I think. I think it's the shared experiences this squad and this side have gone through which make them outstanding. And that goes back to before Kiev, and it goes all the way through Madrid, and it goes all the way through this season. You can teach someone how to play the role of a central midfielder in this team, but you haven't got that shared experience, and you guys haven't got those shared experiences. So every time we go behind now, we understand we've been here before. Mm. We know how to pull ourselves out of this situation. We understand how to win from these positions. And to the point where actually I think, if you allow me to skip forward a bit, Klopp probably walks into the City game and goes, boys, I know yous can do it from behind, but let's make it easy on ourselves and maybe get an early goal this time. Yeah. Because you don't want to have to do that against Manchester City. And it's that shared experience that sets us apart, because we've had such a settled lineup for so long now. all these players have been in the trenches with each other and know exactly how each other are going to react in those situations. And there's not one lad that you look around that team whose head drops.
No.
There isn't one fella whose head drops when we're behind.
No.
Not one. Every single one of them gets up and gets on with the game, puts whatever it is behind them that's happened, and just continues to strive for 3 points. That's what sets us apart.
And to be fair, what we've done from a technical perspective, we've added this season, it's goals from other places. Because I think the big questions are going to be, you've got the key members, that's good. I think we're starting to see the spine. In fact, let me just make sure I've got it in front of me. Developing throughout this period, Virgil van Dijk, Alisson, Sadio Mane, Fabinho, Trent Alexander-Arnold, and Roberto Firmino. That's like, they're all of a sudden you're absolute chaos. How do we go about making sure that they get a little bit of rest? Like Sadio Mane in particular. Salah's obviously had an injury, so he's not, you know, we've been forced to rotate him a little bit. But, you know, it's Adam Lallana coming on and scoring the goal. It's Oxlade-Chamberlain all of a sudden being in the best goal scoring run of form that he's probably been in his entire career. We are Andy Robertson scoring at Villa Park. You know, these are the kind of things that we collectively, as far as our mentality has gotten loads better. But I think we always talk about the mentality, don't we? You know, we're probably sat here saying, have Liverpool really put a scintillating 90-minute performance together? You know, I can think of games from last season and the season before where I'd go, this is what I want to see loads more of. I think probably 45 minutes against Salzburg is probably the best we've played this season.
Yeah, probably.
It was perfection for that period, but I don't think we've really touched upon it once or twice. I think you've mentioned a couple of examples.
I think for me, the Tottenham one in the league, I know you said so far, because I think you're probably implying that the City performance was better. I actually thought Tottenham in the league, that first half, I think that's the best I've seen us play in the league this season, because there were, and that's not necessarily saying that we played quite poorly against Man City, it's just Man City were so good. I thought Man City were really good in the Anfield game as well. You know, and Ross, obviously the spell that we've just had, like, climaxes with the Man City win, and that's where we're up to now. We were discussing on the Around the League when we filmed that this morning. That felt like a real statement when, you know, VAR and refereeing decide, put all that aside, we were better than Man City, and we were better than a pretty much a full strength Man City side, you know, bar the goalkeeper and the centre-back. They had De Bruyne, they had Aguero, they had Sterling, they were all on the pitch, they were looking to win the game. And, you know, we discussed, didn't we, about it felt like a performance that would make people's heads turn, and, you know, the fact that we showed up against, as I say, a really strong Man City side, and put them to the sword a little bit, really. It felt like a real step forward and a statement.
Yeah, I think Chris was right before. When we've seen this progress throughout 2, 3, 4 years, you see it week in, week out, whereas, you know, I think there's a perception of Liverpool or what they've done that, you know, it might drop off at some point, but I think we showed last season when we pushed each other, I think Liverpool just continued that run of form and the mentality that they've got. And, you know, I spoke to a Man City fan, and she was like, she wasn't annoyed about the handball. She's like, that was one of our best side, bar our goalkeeper, and like, you wiped the floor with us. Mm-hmm. And that's a statement not just to the rest of the league, but to Man City as well. But I also think it's good in the fact that other teams can take from that. So like Leicester, Chelsea, when they can play City soon, have a go. Because the past 2-3 seasons, people don't do that against Manchester City. They lost the game for a ball was kicked. I'm thinking, well, we're done now, but they can be got out, because between now and January, because they're missing Laporte, who's massive for them. And it's all right, putting Fernandinho there, he's not saying he's crap, but he's not the same as Laporte.
No, it's definitely not the same, especially when you've got to take him out of midfield as well to sacrifice that.
I think for me, why I like the City performance more than any other, and I do think you're right, by the way, I do think there are better footballing performances from this Liverpool side, but when you're looking at the 12 league games and you look at how each of those play out, to see Liverpool not dominate possession and to see Liverpool still go and beat the side comfortably is for me, it's the biggest mark of a great side. We're not playing it on our terms. We didn't play that game on our terms, and yet we did at the same time, because we knew what to expect and we knew exactly how to deal with it. We just didn't have the ball. And because of that, I thought it was an outstanding performance from Liverpool. Defensively, we were unbelievable. You know, how we kept Sterling to no goals and no shots on target, even though it lost me money.
You know, because you put a bet on, didn't you? It was him and Mane to have a shot on target. And we didn't know this at the time, of course, but Sterling's never had a shot on target at Anfield.
Yeah, that's why
it was
the fucking bookies just play on him, isn't it? You know what I mean? Bastards.
Yeah.
So for me, that performance was better than any other.
It was brilliant from a fact of, they were starting to creep in this lucky Liverpool stuff a bit, and I think it's a lazy narrative. I think you can look at Sheffield United, lucky, 100%. You know, you don't bank on goalkeepers dropping balls into the back of the net. You can't, when you're doing your spreadsheet and you're working out where your points coming, you're foolish to try and bank on those kind of things happening to you, albeit they do happen every single season. You could argue getting the late penalty against Leicester is a bit lucky, but I think on the grand scheme of things, given how few penalties Liverpool actually get, it's only fair that Liverpool start to achieve some penalties when we've got so many good players, we have so many touches in the box, etc., etc. And ultimately, it's a chance that we take and we score. It's not like it was a goal gifted to us by any stretch. And then Aston Villa, you know, we worked against us. Yeah, we went and made that happen. We played till the death. You know, we scored good goals in that game to get that. We crafted good chances. So, and that goes back to my point about getting the goals from all over the place. This isn't Liverpool being totally reliant on three really good players to do all the good stuff for us. I actually think it's. I don't think barring Sadio Mane, I don't think the front three are in particularly great form. To be honest, particularly in this little spell that we've discussed. So I think that's why Man City's so good. As we go into that, are Liverpool lucky? Are we going to see all of this luck finally run out against the best team in the world, elect Manchester City? And Chris is right, he's all right. We stepped up and we absolutely battered Man City.
Is it luck though? Like, if those goals aren't in the last minute and Liverpool's still creating chances, you create your own luck in a sense, don't you?
Ross,
in the rest of football Twitter and the football world, scoring late goals is lucky. It's still in between and the fucking end of the game, which is the same opportunity the other side has, by the way. Yeah. It's just that we take ours.
No, if Virgil van Dijk wants to punt one up into the air in the 97th minute when we've had 2 minutes more than the natural added time, and it hits a bird and it dive bombs in and clips in off the crossbar off the back of the keeper's head or something.
A bit like Pickford.
You know, but I'll take that as luck. And I'll hold my hands up and say Liverpool have been lucky, but I think when people say lucky, the vast majority of these people, we all know who we're talking about, opposition fans and all that kind of stuff. It's just jealousy.
We've been there.
I've been giving it to Man United.
This luck is going to fucking run out at some point. Yeah. Hang on a minute, you've scored another late winner again. It's only when you realise how good your side is that you realise it's not.
We have become the side that I hated of the Man United sides growing up. You know, this from around when I really got into football, probably around, you know, probably not long after the Champions League win for Liverpool, and then, you know, going onwards, and you had that period where Ronaldo was at Man United, and Rooney and Tevez and all that, and they were just so good at turning games around, doing all that. And all those characteristics now, you know, it's amazing to see in this Liverpool side. And on the flip side, you know a few Man United friends who are also agreeing the same thing right now, but are also going, yeah, and I can see so many things about the glory days and the way
the Man United fans are the actual best people to talk to about it, because they recognise it's not just luck.
Mm, yeah.
But City did it two seasons ago. I think he had five games on a bounce.
That was luck.
But the goals coming from other areas, Paul's a good point, because you can see I've got the goal contributions on here as well. You've got
page is that?
That's between the one, and one between the two.
Section B. Yeah.
That's the one between 2-1. So what I think a criticism from Liverpool fans maybe over the last couple of years has been that there's not been enough goals coming from midfield, or not enough goal contributions coming from midfield. But obviously Chamberlain has four goal contributions in this spell. And then you've got Fabinho and Henderson as well, also providing a goal and assist each. And, you know, Salah, OK, we've talked about maybe the form of the front three hasn't been brilliant, but Salah does chip in. He's got a couple of penalties along the way. But there's signs already that maybe, you know, the likes of Henderson and Fabinho, and particularly Oxlade-Chamberlain, are ready to now start to chip in with a little bit more numbers-wise.
Competitive. We've got a competitive squad for the first time, and we'll see how long that lasts, because it never does. You very rarely have a 100% fit squad for very, very long, because that's just football, isn't it? But, you know, the Oxlade-Chamberlain stuff is the most important stuff, I think, in this, because you've got a lad there who is doing everything in his powers. But I was talking to my dad about this yesterday and saying, like, now, he's only doing it against lesser opposition at the moment. And that's not a criticism of Oxlade-Chamberlain, because he should be doing it against those teams, and he is. So, great. You know, tick.
Makes a change.
Yeah, tick. You know, I it's like the whole thing I always say about like loan players. Whenever we loan kids to the Championship, for me, they should go and be the best players in the Championship or in that bracket. Oxlade-Chamberlain should be better. Should be the best player on the pitch against the vast majority of teams Genk, that we call Arsenal, against, like, the 80% of the teams that Liverpool have to play on a season-by-season basis, if he wants to be good enough to play for Liverpool. He's not really been tested in the big games yet, but that's to come. But in the meantime, what you're getting is Jordan Henderson sitting to the side, watching him performing in these other games and going, fuck. Fuck, I need to make sure that I'm absolutely at peak. So then you have performances like Manchester City where Jordan Henderson is absolutely outstanding because two reasons. He's had a little bit of a rest, which is great, squad rotation, and he's had a rocket up the arse because he knows that if he doesn't deliver, that's the next natural progression is Oxlade-Chamberlain starts coming in for these games. So Henderson can't afford a drop-off, and that's that wonderful pressure cooker. But in that night, it's a nice building, you know, encouraging pressure as opposed to being like oppressive. Like,
yeah, it's not going to be a vicious rivalry between the players, is it, Ross? It's going to be healthy competition. Who, you know, it's not a team of individuals, but at the same time it is, because they all want to be in the side, but they appreciate that they're going to have to work bloody hard to get there. You know, they can there's a appreciation of what everybody else is doing probably in the squad.
Yeah, especially for Henderson's case with AB being the captain, but like, it's not just Oxlade-Chamberlain he's got to compete with. Is, you know, there's probably Naby Keita, Genie, and Milner in there as well. But it's good that the fact that I think Fabinho's kind of given Hendo license to go free sort of towards the end of last season. When Fabinho settled in, Hendo had that role further forward. He's getting goals against Southampton and other places like that. But equally, he can play the six if Fabinho needs a rest. So it's not like they're not all competing for one place. They're all competing for three spaces in the midfield, aren't they? Because they're kind of interchangeable. But I reckon Fabinho's just changed his whole side for me. The fact that they can go forward, the people that you mentioned before, that are people that are getting goals. Robin Trent can go forward a bit further because they've got Fabinho behind them. Gene and Hendo can go forward because Fabinho's behind them. You know, Chamberlain can go forward because Fabinho's there to mop everything up.
And let's not forget, Fabinho sticks a banging against Man City. And I'm not expecting him to score 5+ goals a season.
No,
but
10.
Just be like, yeah. But just having that periodically, throwing that in there, they're the levels to what we're talking about. And I've been saying this all year long, really. I don't think we've seen the best of what Liverpool's best team looks like. We're seeing an actual evolution of that, because again, if Oxlade-Chamberlain is capable of delivering these performances that we're seeing against the best, he'll make himself, it'll impossible for him not to be in those games, because we're not that far removed. A year since we said Gomez has got to play right back against the good teams. And Trent can't play against them because of the defensive. We need to have the solid defensive thing. And now Trent plays against everyone because he's so good that you can overlook that you might lose a little bit of something going the other way. But what he gives going forward is so much more. And I still would say, I mean, look, we saw the first glimpses, didn't we, in this period of the Fabinho, Keita, Oxlade midfield. And it was bonkers at times. But like, for the first outing, I think it was pretty, you know, a pretty interesting experiment, a pretty positive experiment. Still stands to reason that we might yet, if both of those players continue their development,
they might end up, you might end up seeing that more often and in bigger games.
All of a sudden,
well,
you've got two guys playing attacking midfield who can score 10 goals a season, and the rest of the world be damned
suddenly,
when that happens.
Yeah, I mean, and you've just, got sorry,
just
as well.
I feel like you're going to move on. Just before you do, if you look at the lads who are fringe players and who've got goal contributions. So Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, 4 goal contributions. Divock Origi, 2 goal contributions. Adam Lallana, is that 2 goal contributions?
Yes.
Jimmy Milner, 1 goal contribution. They're all lads, and sorry to harp back to the shared experience thing, who've been there a long time.
Yeah.
Who understand what this side's about. The one lad who's been there, a season and a half now, Naby Keita, but hasn't had that football with everybody, doesn't have any goal contributions in that.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Time. You know what I mean? And I think that's important as well. So you might have more talented players on the bench than Adam Lallana to bring on against Manchester United.
But he's
been there and done it with everyone before. Mm. And he knows how they're going
to
play.
Nah, to be fair, I mean, look at the Naby stuff. I think we'd all agree he's the one who's the step behind everyone at the moment in terms of, you know, he just needs that game time. His body's not allowing him to do it. But in so many of those goal contributions that you mentioned, he's actually the pass before the pass. That you look at, like, Adam Lallana's goal. I think it's him who plays it to Robbo, who plays it across. There's actually a few instances in that. So he's probably behind. But it wouldn't shock me to see us looking at this at the end of January. And we're talking about Keita with like a couple of assists and a goal or something from probably much improved minutes than this, but still probably less minutes than Oxlade-Chamberlain, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Keita, he's played 228 minutes. I think for me, as I said, the worrying performance for me, I say the worrying performance, that's probably a bit strong, but for me, having done relatively well away at Genk, I wanted to see more from him in the Arsenal game because, you know, Arsenal played probably a stronger side than us, but still not an Arsenal side. And they're really the Arsenal game and the Genk at home where he gets brought off in both games. I know he's still trying to find his feet, but, you know, again, after injuries and stuff, but they were performances for me where I was hoping that he would have just more of a grip on the game and a bit more influence, and we never really saw that. But obviously, we're going to move on to obviously looking forward because we've got a lot of games to come now, and, you know, you imagine that he's going to get minutes on the pitch. And,
You're right. I think everyone's been a bit underwhelmed by Naby Keita. I think this social media temptation to put big labels on things at all times is a bit ridiculous, you know. And I think you're starting to hear what does he bring, or he's a flop, or he's a fraud, and all that. You're starting to hear people who just make these big loud noises, probably just because they're a bit unloved and they need a bit of attention in their lives or what have you. But I've seen some positives. I think the most positive thing you can say about Naby Keita, and this is going to sound mad from a £50 million footballer, is that he's not been exceptional, but I also don't think he compromises what we do when you put him in the team. And at the minute, if the worst case scenario of Naby Keita is that you can give Gini Wijnaldum 1 in 3 games off so that Wijnaldum's fit and functional and able to be at the best of his ability, then great.
Yeah.
Then absolutely fine. You know, this isn't the stage. We're not bringing Jordan Rossiter into a midfield for the sake of just bringing Jordan Rossiter into midfield or a Ben Woodburn or whomever that we've had, God knows how many other players we've had down the years. He's actually having a positive impact. I think we can all see it. He's a tidy footballer. But he probably just needs that.
But it's what you want from squad players. Right now, he's a squad player. Yeah. What do you want?
Yeah. It's a FIFA culture, isn't it?
Do you want them to be better than your first teamers? Yeah, that's probably what people want.
Yeah.
But the fact is, our first team's pretty damn good. Yeah. It's doing all right on its own. So, I don't know. What do you want from a squad player? We've said all along our squad players need to be, instead of £10 million, this is going back a few years, they need to be 20 or £30 million players. Man City got £50 million players. Do you think they're still fucking whinging when Mahrez doesn't do what Sterling does on a weekly basis? Probably.
Yeah.
You know why? He's not as good as Sterling.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if he was better than Sterling, he'd be in the fucking side.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't make any sense. And you don't have a squad where everybody rotates every week because they're all at the same ability.
It's a tough spell. The beauty is, of course, is we're not talking about a kid, an unproven kid, or a 30-odd-year-old lad who's, you know, he's either, you know, you've got no idea whether he can reach those levels, or he's had his best days and you don't know whether you're going to get that on the pitch anymore. There's so much room for development. His trouble is what he needs to do is put 5, 7 out of 10 performances in, but we're so competitive. And again, look at Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain is putting 8s, 9s and 10s in his limited opportunities, that it's, by comparison, he's looking like the weakest member of our squad, but fantastic. Absolutely fucking fantastic. If Naby Keita and Adam Lallana are the poorest performers or whatever you want to, however you want to label it.
It's not like they're playing poorly. I think that's the thing I've got to highlight with my point. It's not like I think he's coming on, he's having an absolute, he's stinking the place out and he's being dragged off the pitch. But just to respond to your point, Chris, I think you're right, he is a squad player. I don't know whether, maybe I just had shifted expectations of what I thought he was going to do.
Did.
You know, and maybe that's what it is. And I think that as a result, your perception of what he's actually doing. Maybe this is it. Maybe this is...
Your perception probably is that Wijnaldum's not a £70 million player.
Yeah.
And I think he is.
I think that's
spot on, isn't it? It's what we expect. This is what we're seeing. And again, I come back to this. Name a fixture that Liverpool could possibly have. And if you tell me Keita's starting in that game, am I asked? Are you asked?
You know, you probably go ahead.
Okay. You know, the worst you're going, okay, like, intro. Yeah. Okay, that's interesting. Let's see that. No, I'm not going, what the hell is he thinking doing that? Which we do with Adam Lallana, who has proven himself at Liverpool, by the way, who has proven himself at, you know, international and Premier League level over a number of years. But that's where Keita's at. He's falling foul of our probably expectations. Of watching too many RB Leipzig compilations. I watched two performances for them.
You know, and decided he was the best player.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, you know, he just...
And one of them, we were in a hotel somewhere, Barcelona maybe?
And the telly was like on a screen up high and I was
and
half
the beers
cup.
Were big.
Yeah, big beers, like, yeah.
We told the barman to put it on just so we could watch Naby Keita as well.
But as we move into this period, which is going to be the most intense period I think we'll have ever experienced as a football team, as fans and all that kind of stuff, what we've done with what we've done so far, and fingers crossed it stays that way through injuries and what have you, is we've put a situation where any one of those fringe players that we keep mentioning are more than capable of dropping into any game of football. I mean, you just put in the list, Adam Lallana still probably is classed by most as the weakest. If we had to play Joe Gomez in a game,
most people are clamouring for it.
Yeah. Naby Keita.
Except England fans.
James Milner. Yeah, prick. Divock Origi, Oxlade-Chamberlain, Dejan Lovren, even Jordan Henderson to some extent.
Yeah. The options are good. Ross. And as Paul alludes to, there, it is a busy period that we're entering now. We've got 14 games in 42 days, starting from Crystal Palace on Saturday. So, you know, and then running right the way up to the 3rd of January, which will be the FA Cup third round, which we've not been drawn in. No doubt we get a top six side away from home, because that's just the way it goes.
Because we're lucky.
Because we're really lucky, and, you know, City getting Oxford away in the Carabao Cup quarterfinals isn't a problem at all.
That's a really good time.
They'll probably get Shakhtar Donetsk again, the lucky bastards.
So what we've got on... If you can find them among the pages of documents,
I'm not even going to try.
We've got Liverpool's full fixture list. It's got a picture of Jurgen Klopp on it. November the 23rd to the 4th, that's the 5th. You know, you've got a run there which includes two World Club Cup games. You've got Aston Villa in there in the League Cup. There should be a West Ham game in there which has been postponed and tossed into the later on stage of the season somewhere.
Floating in the ether at the moment.
So, not much on that. But Ross, the full fixture list, we've got a 4,437 mile each way trip to Qatar to do.
Maybe Shaqiri's taking that fixture all the way to Mount Doom, by the way.
I've completely forgotten about him. He can re-emerge at some stage. That'd be quite useful, I imagine. it's gonna be tough, isn't it? You know, but when you compare, you know, when you talk about
he'll
all
be on the
things,
bench against Villa.
The fume.
The look on his face. But when you talk about what we just talked about, and obviously the squad depth that we've got, and the conversations about the performances that we're having, it makes me feel quite encouraged. You know, it's not like I'm looking at this going, oh my God, how are we going to cope? I'm thinking along the lines of, well, this is the challenge that we're more than capable of meeting.
Yeah, I think you take into account everyone else is in the same position, really. You said we're the same as Man City. We beat Napoli. We can afford to rotate against Salzburg. I think you can just take out the Aston Villa fixture straight away.
It'd be nice if we could take, the Aston Villa fixture. I mean, on paper, City have the same amount of games as over the period. If you take the Aston Villa fixture out, you know, because our squad isn't going to play that. So City, including a cup game, have 13 games, which is every 3.2 days. We're playing bang on an average every 3 days. In that time.
So you're saying if you take, we're playing 14 times, take that Villa fixture out, we're actually playing, our first team squad's playing exactly 30, the same amount as City.
And actually, when you've got the full Man City fixture list, is there. City as well, I think there's a few interesting things to point at because they've got a tough run of games, but also if you look around Christmas, particularly the Christmas period, they have quite a tough turnaround between quite a few of the games. So they play Leicester on the 21st, okay, but then they've then got a 6-day rest. But they've then got Wolves away on the 27th, Sheffield United at home on the 29th, Everton at home on the 1st of Jan, and then the cup game that weekend. You know, the games come thick and fast for City as well. So we're kind of looking at it, and I think, you know, obviously it's great that we're in this World Club Cup, and we're looking at all these games. Actually, I don't think it's quite as bad as the media in particular are making out, to be perfectly honest.
I think some of this is hyped up because there's people who will have rights to these games, and they need to make sure that everyone thinks that the Carabao Cup is a big game. Mm. I don't think we'll treat it as such. I don't think we'll be allowed to. I did the newsroom last week with Karl Mark, and we were talking about this, about the potentials. He'd inquired to FIFA about the rulings on the squads, and they've not really had any clarification back on what it means, about whether Liverpool can fly people over for these media stuff that they need to do where they get their green screen photos and all that done, and maybe fly some people back for the Carabao Cup game, whatever. Yeah. Because if they can't do that, you're dead right. It'll be the barest of bare bones squads. What's not been factored in is that Klopp probably is probably quite happy with a bit of warm weather training in the middle of it. You know, gets to take the lads away, and it's not like when you take them to Marbella or whatever, and they don't play a competitive. You know, they're just training and whatever. Yeah. They're being kept in rhythm at the same time, but they also get a bit of sunshine. They probably get a bit of relax, spend some time in the hot tub and chill and chat. They could come home with a little bit of a suntan and a prestigious trophy at the end of it, and then you're settling back into the winter period. So, you know, it's not going to be potentially anyway. Obviously, injuries will be the big contributing factor to this. I don't think it's quite as damaging as maybe some might.
Do you think there's a scenario at all, Chris, where obviously because the first game on the Wednesday in Qatar is a semi-final, you'd expect, we're kind of talking as if we've got both, you know, as if we'll definitely be in the final. No, there's a third, fourth place player. So you've got two games to play. Is there a scenario, do you think, where depending on, say, the opposition in the semi-final or whatever, that there are a few first teamers left to be mixing in with the Villa squad, and then they just fly out for the final / the third, fourth place playoff at the weekend?
The way that I've had the things explained to me, and I'm not caught up on the Karl Markham show yet, is that Liverpool have to have their players out 3 days prior to the tournament to take part in the commercial duties. So Liverpool are going to take their entire first team squad, I think, and split that into two groups, one for the semi-final, one for the third, fourth place playoff / final. I think that's almost two separate sides because there's 2 days in between it.
Yeah.
So I think you just treat that as, let's just go two games.
Yeah.
Two different sides if you can.
Okay.
Or very close.
You can't. What we're saying is basically
anyone. You can't leave any at all.
You can't. You're not going to be able to. The only way you could conceivably bring someone in for the Villa game is if they were flown to Qatar to do all these duties, and then flown back for the Villa game, then flown back to Qatar for the game, which is not... But that's not been confirmed yet.
They have to be in Qatar on the 15th for media duties. Now, no one knows if that's for 1 day, 2 days or 3 days of media duties prior to the tournament. The Villa game's on the 17th. So as Paul says, sounds like you can go back and forth. Don't see the point personally. I think a big fuck you to the Carabao's absolutely fine in this scenario. A load of trust in the kids as well. Mm. Play your players, come back. And the interesting thing for me is moving on to the league stuff, because I think that's more important for us all right now, is that I don't know how Leicester squad deals with that for the amount of fixtures they've got. Yeah. And I know how Manchester City squad deal with it, but I think, you know, the injuries that they've had so far this season and stuff like that, I'm not sure how Chelsea squad deal with it. I'm not sure how young players playing that amount of football can continue the level of consistency that they've had this far.
Leicester have got that. I mean, you looking at the fixtures of the rivals, I guess, for top four as it stands, and obviously City are finally starting to play some good teams, because we'd seen that the table of strength of schedule that came out last week, where City have basically had the second easiest start of the season so far out of everyone, which is typical. But obviously they play in this upcoming run from the weekend onwards: Chelsea, United, Arsenal, Leicester, Wolves, and obviously Sheffield United. At the moment, are right up there. So you know that could still be a difficult fixture. Although I think their legs will have fell
Newcastle
off.
Newcastle away, they lost at Newcastle last season.
And you've mentioned they've got the Zagreb away game in there before going to Arsenal, which is a big old trip to undertake. But the Leicester thing, I think Chris is right. You know, they've got Everton in the League Cup, City away, then us at home over that really busy period, you know, just before and after Christmas. That'll be a big, big test for them. I should give more credence to Chelsea. I don't know. I mean, they've got some tough games again, as mentioned, City, Spurs, and Arsenal in this spell. But I don't know. I think
by the time you get to when it comes to Leicester for me, by the time you get to the 21st of December, Man City play Leicester, you'll be able to decide whether or not by that point, if Leicester are still about, you know, if they're still within a couple of points of City or even ahead of City, then at that point you go, okay, well, Leicester are involved, and they're, you know, but for me, that is a game there where you go, you reach that point and you can see you've had a busy period.
They've got a chance to set the narrative for the season in that build up, because you're dead right, because it's the difference between, are Leicester fighting for top four, or are they fighting for the title, or are they fighting for the second place in the league, or whatever? Yeah, you're right. That's a fixture we'd have probably dismissed 3 months ago, and all of a sudden, you know, particularly given all the exertions and the fact that City will have played some big games in the build up to that as well. You're right. Leicester could, if it's neck and neck at that point, Brendan Rodgers is sending them into that game going,
it's got
lads.
An absolute chance to be neck and neck as well. I mean, Brighton away, Everton home, Watford home, Villa away, Norwich home. Are their fixtures before they meet Man City in the league?
Yeah.
I think they'll be there or thereabouts with Manchester City after when they come to play them. Yeah. And I think that puts huge amounts of pressure onto Manchester City as well.
They could put a dent in their title hopes. They've already lost 3 games so far this season.
Yeah.
You could easily lose to Chelsea.
And this is the thing for me, again, we were discussing on the Round the League this morning. My confidence about the league challenge going forward from a Liverpool's perspective is not necessarily that Liverpool aren't going to lose 3 games. I think, you know, it's feasible with the amount of fixtures going on and some of the fixtures we've got to play. Liverpool could go and lose 3 games, you know, but I still, when I look at Man City's run, I fancy them to lose more before we've lost 3. And I think that for me is at the moment where I'm sat there and I'm like, you know, it's not done at all. There's a real busy period coming now. And I'm not saying by any stretch of the imagination that I think it's a done deal that Liverpool are going to go and lift this trophy. But I think, well, we go through that period. I wouldn't say Liverpool are going to win 14 games out of 14 games, but Manchester City certainly aren't, especially with the fixtures that they've got. You know, when you compare the league run that we've got and compare what they've got, you know, we've talked about the ease of the run that Man City have. On paper now, we've got a pretty much similar story. You've got the likes of your Brightons and your Watford at home. You know, you've got Bournemouth away, which historically over the last couple of seasons we've done quite well at. These are the types of games that I expect us to be winning. City, meanwhile, I've got to go to Arsenal, I've got to go to Burnley on a midweek game. It's tough.
Can I just do the 100 point watch segment of the show?
Go for it.
So to get to 100 points, Liverpool need to win 20 and draw 6 of their remaining 26 games. Or another way round, win 21, draw 3, lose 2.
Take that.
To get to 100 points for Manchester City, win 25, lose 1.
Yeah. I think for me,
that's a fucking big ask on the 100 points.
But they're capable.
They are capable.
They've come and win 18 of the last 19 games last season.
But Liverpool are capable of doing win 25, lose 1 as well.
This upcoming weekend, I think, is so massive to all of this. Because of the way the fixtures have fallen, you know, Liverpool on paper have the easier run of opposition teams. It goes back to the strength schedule table and what have you. That, you know, our next 5 is ranked as 19th most difficult, and then the remaining season is ranked as 18th. We've given ourselves the best possible position in this. City going up against Chelsea at the weekend. Palace, we've ridden our luck a couple of times at Palace in recent years, late winners, all that kind of stuff. Because of all that brilliant work we've done, just psychologically having another ground out win to get us over the line on that, but you don't want to have done all that hard work to get that point gap established over Man City. to then to slip up a little bit at your first next possible opportunity. But you know, if you can go, and no matter, because I think City will beat Chelsea, if I'm honest, but they'll have to exert a lot of energy to do it, I think, because Chelsea will go and look to give them a bloody nose. I don't think Chelsea will come and park the bus. I think they'll go and swing for them. You know, they're going to come out a bit short of breath, you know what I mean, out of that game. And if we've managed to get the points, you want them drained. You want them thinking, God almighty, that was so grueling, and Liverpool have just gone and done it again. Where are we going to start to close the gaps? It's a good question.
It's 5:30 Saturday night, so they play after us.
Oh.
So that'd be nice. You know, obviously, if we show up there and we do the job at Palace, they then go into that home game against Chelsea, 12 points behind. And Chelsea, as you say, the last couple of seasons, Chelsea really haven't bothered showing up at Man City. Last season, I think it was 6-0. The season before that, Conte showed up, parked the bus and lost 1-0. That was the season City run away with it. But yeah, I think you're right. I think the way, to be fair to Chelsea, Lampard's got them playing, you know, without fear. They're just happy to go and win games and play the football. And maybe that is a reason that they'll come undone a little bit, because, you know, lack of experience in games where they come thick and fast. But at the same time, I think going into this weekend, Tammy Abraham's absolutely on fire. You've got Mason Mount. And you've got the likes of Reece James as well. I think they'll be full
of
confidence. You've
got Leicester, and I was going to use the expression snapping at Man City's heels, which is actually completely the opposite of technically what's happening in the league at the moment, because Leicester are above Man City. But you've got Leicester go to Brighton away, you'd be banking on Leicester picking 3 points up there, and that's a point. All of a sudden, this next 3 or 4 games has got the potential to change the conversation from City looking at our result as the first result to City looking at Leicester's result as the first result every weekend all of a sudden. Because if they were to drop points, even if they only get a draw against Chelsea and Leicester pick it up, well, that's make it like 4 points or whatever it'll be. The gap starts to grow between Leicester and City, and that becomes different. Liverpool stand on the precipice of being too far away. That, you know, we've talked about it all the time. You know, 9 points. We wouldn't if we were chasing City. If we were 9 points behind Man City now, I'd be like, nah, that's the difference.
They've won it before.
True.
That's why I think we'd be like, it's probably game over at this point.
But there's also that point, isn't there, where they go, whether having won it, have they got the desire to recapture it? Do they start to turn their attentions
to the Champions League?
Exactly, to all these other bits and pieces. Does Pep Guardiola psychologically? Is he able to keep himself in check, because we know how intense he gets over these things? And I'm hoping, and the way I've looked at this Sterling stuff with the Gomez stuff is, I think they're all so tightly wound over it that it's not going to take just a little poking and prodding here and there. And
they're looking to.
Well, teams,
eyes
we've
out.
Seen it. Absolutely. We've seen it already.
Sheffield, yeah.
Well,
well,
yeah, but to watch the Sheffield United, doing, yeah. But like in terms of,
they won't though, really. Like. And I don't think they ever take the focus off Liverpool, no matter how far ahead Leicester are. I genuinely think their focus is Liverpool.
But on the pitch, I think, you know, as Paul alluded to, there might just be a little bit of provocation. Just teams, we've seen evidence already where teams go for it. Norwich was the best example for me. Teams go for it. City might just begin to.
And Wolves.
When they re-sign really Company in a month's game. Time, you know, the shit in the bed.
Yeah, basically, yeah. It comes to January.
Imagine. Oh my God, yeah. It doesn't get any more obvious, does it? Oh, yeah. They might as well just paint. We've shit the bed on the side of the Etihad. That'd be fucking amazing.
No one would ever see it, though, if they put it on the side of the Etihad.
Yeah, sure. If they put it inside, they wouldn't see it, to be honest. Away from the cameras.
Yes, basically. Right, we'll wrap it up there, gents. Mm. Thanks very much for joining me. Don't forget to check out your subscription to The Athletic, the best football writing in the world, including the likes of James Pearce and Simon Hughes. You can go over to theathletic.co.uk/RedmenTV for 50% off your annual subscription and a 30-day free trial. Also, don't forget that the likes of the Umbu this week will be coming, the Uncensored Match Build-Up Show, and also the Around the League show is out today on the Redmen TV.
Ross doesn't know why you're asking him.
Yeah, no.
He shook his head at you. And then you made the final decision.
It's today. It's coming out later on today, or it might already be out by the time this is out.
Brilliant.
I'm not too
wrap
sure.
It up, then.
Thank you very much. And thanks very much for watching and listening. Thanks very much for joining me, guys. Goodbye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.